This is the Zodiac Degrees podcast. I'm Greta Lee. Today, the degree that we're looking at is the seventh degree of Aquarius. Saturn is going direct at 6 degrees 53 minutes of Aquarius, or seventh degrees in ordinal numbers, on October 10th, 2021. This is this mid to late October sort of set of planets going direct, a huge pivot or turning point or transition of the trajectory of the end of the year. Every episode of the Zodiac Degrees podcast has an image that I've hand-drawn and colored in with gouache and paint from the Astrolabium Planum. They should pop up in whatever app that you listen to the podcast in, although I think they vary on how large you can make the image. I haven't looked at every platform. So you can always go to my Patreon, which if you go to Patreon and you just look up Zodiac Degrees, none of the degree images are paywalled. They're all available there in like a larger format in case you can't zoom in or open the image. Cause I feel like Apple Podcasts is okay. Spotify is like much better. Although I'm like not a huge fan of like the Spotify artist payout system. So, but I know it's a better designed app for that. In any event, there you go. You can check out the Patreon. You can even join the Patreon for bonus stuff if you want to throw a few dollars into this. Okay, let's see. Back to the seventh degree of Aquarius. The image for this in the Astrolabium Planum is it's a sword, and it's like no one's holding the sword. It's just a sword like on the ground. Or on a shelf or something. It's just like a sword on display. It's a pretty cool image. And the William Lilly translation says, in the seventh, a sword drawn, lying on the ground. And a soldier or warlike person it represents. So that's interesting. And Saturn going direct and picking up the sword laying on the ground. Okay, the Dr. Mark Edmund Jones Sabian symbol says, a child born of an eggshell. And he interprets this as infinite regression in personal reality, unlimited potentialities in each moment of self-realization, projecting self into what has been or may be, sustaining the auric egg or self-matrix. Essentiality. Positive is person who is highly individual and resourceful, and negatives are naive and reliance on external accident. So the sword and the egg, I'm not really positive. There is a one-to-one. It makes the sword seem very sexual. Like there's this like phallus egg dynamic going on. Also that the idea of projecting yourself and this sword being this sort of extension of your arm or yourself pointing out into wherever you are wielding the sword. And this sort of like force of your will or your ideas or whatever. Okay, Dane Rudyar in The Astrology of Personality says, out of the cosmic egg, life is born, fresh and virginal. And then it says, new actuation of effort by the power of unrealized purposes, self-expression beyond all expectation, and spiritual protection. Okay, so I started thinking of the eggshell as this protection and sword as a protection, as a sort of like shield and aggressive like the defense and offense. And an astrological mandala by Dane Rudyard, which he published some years later, he says, a child is seen being born out of an egg. And it, the interpretation is the emergence of new mutations according to the great rhythms of the cosmos. And then he also says Hiranyagarbha, which is means cosmic egg in Sanskrit. There's a new human being not born from quote-unquote ancestors, free from inertia of mankind's past. So this makes me think of the sword as like a severance from history, or a new charge forward with the sword. This is a new product of evolution, a mutant, fresh projection of creative spirit, emanating from the whole planet, not from a local culture or local racial tradition. So this makes me think of that Aquarian sort of universality, not a local culture, not like a race or ethnic loyalty. And then I'm thinking also of this whole, like the whole thing of like transcending race makes me think of a lot of like this discourse of how recently it's just like we human beings in general, and you know, wherever country you're from, especially America as I'm, or the USA as I'm talking from, has have very much like not transcended race. And but then there's these people who are like, you know, would like to be like race is over, gender is over. And even like moving on into like this transhuman sort of like perspective, which I'm sure has this whole meaning that I only have a very small glimpse of what, of like moving into this like technological future or something that's more at one with all sorts of other species. I'm not sure, but this seems like there's themes of these sort of attempt to like jump beyond these boundaries that we've seen as like natural or just taken for granted for so long, that this degree might have this sort of energy of being like, I refuse these boundaries. I'm an Aquarian. I'm like, and then also in like thinking of a sort of paranoid, negative connotation of that is like this, another sort of, I would say maybe conspiracy theory, where, I mean, it's like a critique of society, like this one world order or one world government, which can be actually is like a legitimate critique of like globalism and like transnational or international corporations, or can like kind of devolve into sort of like more paranoid, unhinged critiques that are maybe more colorful and interesting to read, or maybe just depressing and dark. Okay. So back to Rudyard, he's talking about the emergence of global man for the new age of Aquarius. So that's what I was kind of getting into. Like, what are we, we're in the beginning of the age Aquarius, I suppose. And like, what is it really looking like and where are we trying to steer it? What does the age of Aquarius even mean? And also thinking about this sort of new child born of an like cut free from the like tethers of like this ancestral karma. I'm thinking how much that's a very like millenarian. This millenarian concept, I just went and grabbed this Nicholas Campion book called Astrology and Popular Religion in the Modern West, Prophecy, Cosmology, and the New Age Movement. And in it, he makes a a very academically credible and very interesting case of the Age of Aquarius and the New Age movement as this sort of extension or like next logical step of this this like Christian millenarianism, which is like just this idea of anticipating Judgment Day, revelations, where we will be born again, people will be judged, just sort of like the end of the Bible, and this always being anticipated. And in the West, there's still a lot of people acting in ways that are very much of the like Judeo-Christian or Abrahamic, or I would say even more regularly than not, in a sort of Protestant Christian ethos. And a lot of the underlying assumptions and themes of like New Age astrology can really, really have historical roots in the sort of like radical Christian traditions that came out of the English Civil War, 19th century radical movements. And this idea of like being born again, it's just like this idea of being baptized, of being pure, and of like facing the light, the realization, like having this Age of Aquarian sort of expanded consciousness is really like analogous to like coming home to Jesus. Or there's just different cultural contexts of like explaining these spiritual revelations or having your mind blown or whatever. So that's kind of this interesting, it's just, that's a little tangent, but there's definitely something there about that. Okay, back to the Sabian symbols. Linda Hill, a child born out of an eggshell. So she's going in on in vitro fertilization, cloning, the alchemy that saw the egg as the container for matter and thought. The egg is in a lot of really cool like alchemical artwork from centuries ago, a lot of cool like egg imagery. Also the cosmic egg or world egg, general cosmic symbol, for the vault of space, seven heavens, or the Greek spheres of the heavens. A Chinese myth was that the first man sprung from the egg. So there's just a lot of archetypal egg imagery. Okay, she also says this degree symbolizes big surprises, new ways of doing things, new directions, new solutions, desire to find a unique new way, ability to find a new original path, rebellious energy. She says to be sure to guard against precocious or spoiled attitude. It's important to provide a nourishing environment for a literal or figurative child, for an actual child or for like your brain child, your new idea, to thrive and not die because of a lack of support and initial capital investment. Recognizing potential, a new odd situation that may or may not be viable. Learning from the new unusual situations, prejudice and backlash against the new, gestation of an idea, followed by a period of self-growth, transmutation, creative original impulse, genetic engineering, in vitro fertilization, as she said before, people that are ahead of their time, mutations, thinking about the X-Men, unexpected birth, desire to have children, nurturing the egg, the matrix and the casket, the feminine principle. And a caution is being different only to follow fashion, fear of new ideas, or waning excitement because of lack of support for spoiled. It's like you're really excited for the first moment idea and then lose interest or follow up. A spoiled native attitude, rebellion, uneasiness, prejudice and racial stereotypes, which, this universality But then there's the stereotypes as like a reaction against that, and refusing to believe what you are seeing. I feel like that there's a lot of, I feel like a lot of like older people, I would say, like, this is just like my experience of like, there's like a new technology and they're just like, this is bullshit. You know what I mean? Or like, I remember when like cell phones were coming out, or like people were adopting them more in the early 2000s. And a lot of people were just like, I don't need one. I don't want one. And slowly everybody did. And then there were always like those like holdouts that maybe even still today, they never, the sort of some older people who just like, I don't need one. But there's just like this refusal of this like new technology, which they may have a point, but, or just like, I like to see that happening a lot with crypto right now. People are just like refusing to acknowledge how big it's going to be. Like they refuse to like learn about it even. And if they do learn about it, it's just like very dismissive talking points, like from the New York Times. Like the New York Times is a great example too of, anything that happens on the internet, like newspapers or TV, will always like be derogatory about it. Like the New York Times hates Joe Rogan. I mean, not that I love Joe Rogan. Joe Rogan's like fine, whatever. But it's just so funny how all these newspaper people will be like, almost like jealously, like, this guy is more popular than us. He's not legitimate and you shouldn't listen to him. And this is the reason. And I just feel like that's this like refusal to like see what's happening, to see where technology is going, and just trying to make a case against that rather than at all just like being open-minded and like considering that maybe you've invested years into something like a dying medium and that you need to pivot. And then here a quote is, "The shell must break before the bird can fly," Lord Alfred Tennyson. And I love that, because just thinking of that egg and the sword, and just picturing like one of those, like just like a hard-boiled breakfast egg on one of those little like British little holder thingies where and like for breakfast, and then when people take like the knife and just like lop off the top. For like hard boiled or I think it's more soft boiled, and then you can like scoop out the egg. I've literally never eaten an egg like that, but I'll like see it in like some old timey movie and be like, oh, how, what a delightful little like way to eat an egg. And also don't count your eggs before they hatch. Nice, proverb there. And like that quote showing the importance of like, it's not just that moment of hatching and birth. It's like the investment of the little chicken throughout its whole life. And then also a quote from the Upanishads. "In the beginning, all the universe was non-being. It became being. It grew and formed an egg, which remained unbroken for a year. Then it broke open. Of the two halves of the shell, one was of silver and the other of gold." It's a beautiful little image there. I'm just thinking about Aquarius and just the sense of unique, just like everybody else, of this like true uniqueness, but then also this like the masses and like this vastness. And just, I feel like even being recently at like a large supermarket and like, cause normally I've been going to this farm to go get like really high quality, like pasture raised eggs, and they're just so much better. So like, I haven't bought eggs at a supermarket in a long time. And just like looking at the piles and piles of eggs at this, like, just like so many cartons, I was like, wow, that's so many eggs, versus like when I go to this tiny farm and there's like, you know, just like a handful of these cartons and you grab one. And just that thing of like, there's just so many beginnings out there, but then how, or just like all the acorns coming off a tree. But then if one of these trees grows, it has its own unique life. And it's not just like the beginning can all be quite similar, but then there's, you get the metaphor, whatever. I don't need to belabor that one. Okay. Kapiyan, a man with an energetic air, having drawn his sword with his right hand, pierces a puppet made of soft material, causing its stuffing to fall out. Man versus puppet. It's just the eternal fight. Will we ever resolve man versus puppet? Kapiyan's funny too, because it's always like really specific about if it's like right hand, left hand, right and left, and like kind of this super exact like symbolism of right and left. Okay, the interpretation is danger, vulnerability. Natives are aggressive from imaginary motives. Pick quarrels on no provocation. Right, like you're arguing with a literal puppet. they pick defenseless, innocent adversaries. They have jingoistic, outdated patriotism. They are living in an emotional past. They may strive after inconsequential honors. Their true aims are often veiled from everyone, including themselves. And Aquarians should not contend with others, but fight within. Externalizing all this strife is ridiculous. It's unsociable, lacks geniality. These people are often sarcastic, unscrupulous intelligence, and likely to dispose of others, boast about humane ideals, but are belied by their behavior. I mean, how common is that? Someone who has these like, these are sort of like, especially like collectivist fantasies and ideals, but like, how do you actually live your life? Like, what does the collective organization really look like? Needs to cultivate will and introspection. The enemy is internal unreality. More highly developed people can live this symbol by piercing through pretense and clearing the air. I think that's like a great Aquarian like ethos of just like clear the air and pierce through pretense. Okay, the second image is out of the cosmic egg, life is born fresh and virginal. It says the solution to the man with the sword versus puppet is looking within, bringing all that energy inward to fertilize an egg. So again, this like phallic sort of sword egg stuff. Direct energy to goals greater than yourself. Stop clinging to personal past and old ideas and transmute towards cosmic thinking. That it's interesting that it's like looking inside of yourself is actually less, in this case, seems like it's like less selfish. Because projecting outward is like sort of avoiding your own drama, your own interior drama. And you need to sort of doing the work, which is like such a cheesy cliche nowadays. Doing the work is so vague. Like, what does that mean? Evaluating yourself, like working on your own, doing the work. Okay, I'll just say it on your on your own, like emotional problems, your own like hangups, is less selfish. Like sometimes you have to like start with yourself. And then spiritual protection for those who strive in the service of life. Cool. So, that's like, I'm almost like picturing someone who is like a like a medic on a battlefield or something like that, which there's like this general like attempt to not shoot those people, even though sometimes they, of course they'll get shot, but there's like this extra sort of respect for they're just trying to help. They're not part of the fight. So yeah, I mean, also thinking of just, this like a spiritual protection to those who strive in the service of life and the sort of, hot button. I mean, talking about like a sort of vain and pretentious fight is like the, pro-life versus pro-choice, like abortion, arguments, which is just like one of the most like stubborn, like third rail sort of arguments, for the last few decades or more in like American politics. And this idea of like that thing of like, when does life begin? This like man, or child like leaping from an egg, is it like the moment of conception? And then also, what about the investment in the life? So you're ensuring all these lives happen, and then there's like all their social programs are cut, the buck is passed to like vague religious organizations, and like all sorts of those arguments of like, you know, who is right? Who's really like campaigning for life and campaigning to make life better? Also that sort of like, I think people who want to, fight this, it's like, are they really just like fighting their own, like each side makes the other side into the straw man, right? Like just thinking of like the straw man argument of, like a fallacy where you misrepresent the other side and make it like a really simplistic sort of argument where you can knock them down easily. And, both sides are kind of, are just fighting themselves, and there's not really, because if they fight each other, it's kind of this impasse. Anyway, and then there's just like, also there's just so many like, narratives that it just, I don't want to get off the rails here, but like there's narratives of like population control of like, you know, people are afraid of the vaccine and afraid of abortion because they think that like quote unquote elites are trying to sort of keep the population down, which is not like, is actually like totally stuff that happened. Like the Holocaust was just sort of this population control, like in a way it was just like really fucked up. And when I've been to, where was I? Leipzig. And I was like walking around this beautiful park in the middle of this city. And I was like, wow, like, where is everybody? I was like, oh yeah, everybody's dead. They like killed everybody they could. And then now, almost 100 years later or 75 years later, or whatever, they have more of the city to go around to the, you know, like, I mean, this is all fucked up thoughts, but it's true. This stuff happens. And then also just this antinatalism of be like, how do you, of, there's so many articles nowadays of like, how dare you bring a child into the world? We're so fucked. The environment is about to collapse. Like it's irresponsible. And then people being like, in counter argument to that, like how, like that we're humans, this is what we do. How, like what a hopeless position to be in to say there should be no more children and we should just like stop, reproducing. I'm not really sure. I don't know. Like, I feel like all these arguments are, as I'm saying, like people fighting puppets in a way. I don't really expect people who are really emotional about any of these things to have a like an earnest discussion with someone who may disagree with them on certain points. I'm not really sure where I stand on anything. Maybe I will have, I think I would be very, have very strong opinions that will change day to day. But whatever, all of those subjects, this degree. I mean, right now, Texas and I think Mississippi are made huge sort of pro life, legal accomplishments, so to speak. And people where I am in New England are horrified and want to fight against it. I generally think that abortion should be legal, but also I'm really not into like demonizing people from Texas. I feel like it really devolves really quickly into that, into this sort of like Northeast snobbery, which makes me very uncomfortable because, it just seems like this, divide and conquer thing that's happening more and more that as we're leading up to this Uranus and Gemini coming civil war. So I just like really am more cautious about being like directed of like who to hate and why than having any of these like these principles, you know. It seems like whatever position I'm taking is like I'm being manipulated into it, and I don't know why. So I'm just like cautious to make a stand for certain types of hot button issues. But I will take a stand on like you should just not turn people that are not like you into monsters, and that has to do with like anybody, whether they, you know, whether they're an immigrant from anywhere or they voted for whoever. It's just like this thing where we're turning other people into monsters. Very not cool, not in the age of Aquarius vibes, so not into that. I refuse. Moving on, Corelli. The dangers from sudden impulsiveness in discretion and stubbornness. Greater offensive than defensive aptitude. So this is more of like that's more of the sword and less of the egg. But if you think of it too, that sword is like this big metal sword versus like a small little vulnerable egg. Like the offensive energy or like imagery of the sign is like so much more. They are entitled to some power, but groundlessly wields it in a way that they shouldn't. So, so it's just like, it's sort of, that makes me think of like, sir, this is a Wendy's meme. Like someone trying to like argue, it's like your power here is to like order burgers and fries and leave. That's your power. And instead you're trying to fight like some other fight or argue with the drive-through person. Sharp psychologist of others cannot probe into himself. So yes, that sort of thing of like, you know, look within. It also makes me think of like the narrative of like, this is like a 9/11 narrative of like this jihad thing, where I remember reading stuff, this is like a while ago, but people are like, jihad means like a spiritual struggle within your heart. It doesn't mean going out and like, you know, being a bomb, like bombing a building or an airplane or something. So whoever's doing that isn't really reflective on what that word means. Will not hold to his, okay, so back to Corelli. He will not hold to his own principles, will be satisfied with lower status than he should. It also seems like this like misdirected aggression, where maybe there should be like, you should work on like the sort of ambition in a certain like lane of your skills, but you might be like scattered in where your principles are. You're fighting fights that you don't know who your real enemies are. You haven't really reflected on what you need to be doing. Will squander his energy in mean squabbles and pointless strife from which danger will accrue. This like makes me think of people who are like mean on Twitter and then they get doxxed or something, or they get like, or earlier on, like 10 years ago when people weren't as anonymous on Twitter, where they would be like mean on Twitter and then they would have like consequences in their actual life. And they're not realizing that like all of this like argumentation and like negative energy actually will have a consequence on them. It's not just blowing off steam on the internet. So that's interesting. Okay, charitable. A crown and a scepter. One who is entitled to more than he possesses and who has powers of which he is unconscious. Oh, so this one's like more positive. And this makes me think of the Ace of Swords, the tarot card, particularly like the Marseille tarot card, which I really like that imagery of the crown around the sword. And this idea, I mean, I feel like the positivity of this thing is like, it's like there's so many distractions from like attaining your crown. It's like, what are you sovereign of? And that's an important thing to focus on, especially Saturn being this like air sign and this Saturn ruled air sign where there's like a lot of ideas that can bog you down. And a lot of opportunities to be on the outside of these structures and to be like a dropout and to opt out of these structures, you could focus so much on where you don't fit in and what's not working for you that you're not working, you're unconscious of like where your power lies. So if this degree is like hitting your chart in any certain way, like, Where are you scattering your thoughts and your angry energy? Put that anger towards your own purposes and get what's yours, you know, like go get the bag or whatever. Okay. Sephirial degrees, which are also like La Volosfera. There's two names. It's like La Volosfera degrees as like a translated by sephirial or as received in mediumship. A target pierced by a rapier. So that's like a specific type of sword, which is like a double-edged sword that is for like dueling and sword fighting. Also like, I mean, it's just this idea of rapier is this, I can't help but think there's this penetration, aggressive rape, like element to this of like, and I'm not saying that this, if you have this degree, you're like, that's like a theme. I don't know. Maybe it could be in certain like poorly aspected, it could come up, but, that's interesting. Okay. This symbol denotes one who has extreme powers of penetration, yet will be incapable of self-defense in ordinary affairs of life. Will fall victim to his lack of discretion. This denial of his own convictions will lead him to sore troubles and possibly disgrace. Right. Okay. This makes me think of someone who's like, yeah, like some like aggressive, type of person who is like really good at advocating or fighting for certain things, but like can't like advocate for himself or herself in like simple ways of like getting food together, getting like housing, laundry. And also this makes me think of like this like Aquarian, like sort of giving yourself to the collective or a cause or an idea. And the sun is in fall here. So like not really taking care of yourself. And this being this like point where it's like you could be making headway for your cause or your organization, you could be very aggressive in that, but like really, like maybe some of that is channeled energy from something you should just be focusing on your own like psychological state, or even just like basic well-being. And I mean, I feel like everyone's like this some way, like, I'm really good. I'm like really advanced and good at these skills, but there's like a basic skill somewhere that you're just like, oh, I'm so bad at cooking or taking care of this certain type of basic like thing. And you need to sort of be able to take care of yourself. Okay. Back to Safariel. It says, impulsive, headstrong, and may lead him into serious conflict, may lead him into the danger of assault, hurt in a passage of arms, and beware of the direct thrust. So beware of getting stabbed by a sword or even just like the metaphorical being like stabbed. I think of like also just like, because I feel like a lot of conflict is like playing out on the internet in this like north node of Gemini time. And this like of being like owned on Twitter or being like, there's a certain like really sharp words, which I mean that north node in Gemini trining this Aquarius of like these wielding these ideas and words and sort of like get, you can just sort of see people being like, ooh, they just got like owned. They just got completely demolished in this argument. So don't fight yourself into a corner. Okay. Keen. It says discipline, military or disciplinary nature submits to discipline without questioning its purpose or nature. So this is like, has that sort of aggressive feeling and also a lack of introspection. Linebach, a bothersome precision of the eye and ear, disturbed and critical of any detail that offends, keen to observation. Oh, that offends their keen observation. So, right. That almost seems like this, like a Virgo type thing. Although it's interesting, like, Aquarius is quincunx Virgo, and quincunx can be like a very irritating, a sort of irritating aspect. So this sort of, it, like, there's this keen eye for observation, but it's not like satisfying that you're seeing the granular parts. It's actually annoying. These people can be technically perfect in artistic or music abilities, but tend to lack sensitivity or inspiration and are slow to action. They're more methodical than quick. Makes sharp and piercing insights, but lives in a dream world of unearthly perfection. Right. Okay. So I would say, yeah, like, so that sort of Virgo mutable earth energy of being able to see the details in real life and work with practicality, this detail-oriented vision is in this airy, remove from the reality of changing something. And that itself is probably irritating. You can, it's just sort of this like picturing the granular details of a plan. But, you know, when you start, or even thinking with this egg metaphor, like you have a kid, let's say, and you start like planning what's going to happen with this kid when they're 12 in like super detail. You're going to be disappointed when it comes that the kid didn't want to, you know, play baseball. They're actually a swimmer, or they actually like theater or something completely different from all these granular plans of how your perfect world would live out. E.C. Matthews says intrepidity, a character of depth who is hard to understand, much given to contemplation, seldom acts on impulse and fond of peace, a remarkable memory, So that's really interesting of this person who's very contemplative and actually is fond of peace. And like, so this all of this discussion of this fighting can be just like a real toll on this person who really has this idea of perfection in their mind. And this sort of shows this picture of if someone's like staying in their mind and contemplating stuff, they might not be fighting so much in the real world, and they're really feeding their imagination and their like intellectual and interior lives. Okay. And this E.C. Matthews book is like published in like 1947. It's really interesting. Like the author says, like, for this degree, is like, my father had this degree prominent in this chart. His sun, Mercury, and moon were all at the seventh degree of Aquarius, and said he was like a great guy. This person's like, my dad was sweet. He lived to 100, and he went every day he could. He went fishing, even when he was like in his 90s. So that's this little, and I was thinking about the fishing and that sort of the fishing hook or the lure being this sort of piercing activity, like the sword. But fishing is very contemplative and slow, and you spend a lot of time in your own head and with yourself, and as this like perfect activity to sort of, you're like waiting for the egg to hatch or something, and just waiting for that little pierce of the fish, and then you get the fish. So that's kind of sweet that they added that in there. And then Henson, who basically, the Henson book is like just repeating the Matthews book, but also adds sight, medical, healing, vein of the lower left leg. No, lower right leg, excuse me. Okay, the goldsmith degree. A youthful aviator, having performed a number of amazing stunts, lands his plane and cracks open the door to the cheers of the assembled crowd. So there's an inborn talent and self-confidence, a natural. Yeah, I'm just thinking of that like landing the plane, and that plane being this like metal egg almost, and cracking open the door as this like little birth. But then also like the amazing stunts being sort of this like sword-like war, agility, warlike agility. So inborn talent, self-confidence, and natural precociousness or precocity, developing your own way of doing something and perfecting it, seeking public adoration, assuming you are predestined for success, seeing new openings for accomplishments, bold action that breaks tough obstacles, determined to make dreams into reality, someone who is headstrong, someone who's rushing projects without adequate groundwork and financial support. That aviator just like moving so fast, and not really doing this like Capricorn sort of basic foundation building, an enthusiasm for life, retaining childlike enthusiasm or emotionally childish, petulant, thin-skinned, physical agility, sure knowledge of one's potential, and treating your own particularities as God-given gifts. I love, that's like so Aquarius. It's just like of this like a kind of negative, but also I would say sort of endearing, as long as it's like not too intense, but like, I am strange this way. Like I like, pickle sandwiches or whatever. And that being some sort of like amazing thing about you. And it's just like, yeah, everybody has their things. Like it's not, it's not like that. You're not that great, but sometimes that is, it's like everybody does have their little things that make them great. So as long as you don't get like too big of a head about it.
The Hyperion Degree by McClung says it is two rivers that converge at a water gap. And it symbolizes the congruency of effort and goal and has a gravitations that bring them together, and themes of cooperation, unity, agreement, and a settlement by common consent. Now, it's really interesting that this Hyperion Degree is talking about agreement and consent when some of these other significations are talking about a sort of like unbalanced argument, or someone who's projecting their own conflict out into the world towards innocent or unworthy opponents, like a puppet. So this idea of like agreement and consent and two rivers converging seems like it's this sort of ideal. And it's not like the rivers seem like they have their own natural or like gravity driven force of water towards the ocean. It seems inevitable. There's not like this, this struggle or argument there. It's just, the water's going where it's going, and you've got to just agree, converge into one flow. It's also this idea of consent and rape. I mean, that's like a huge talking point in the last, 5 years or so since the whole Me Too movement. And the rapier, which is the double-edged sword used in sword fighting in Europe, it is etymologically connected to the word rape, which originally just meant to, I'm looking at etymology online, meant to seize, prey, abduct, take, carry off by force. And it didn't really have that sexual component, I think, until later, like in a sense of in the Latin Greek root word rapere. It would just kind of meant this like plunder, getting, snatching, extortion, which is all connected to, sexual exploitation. But it took, many centuries to take on that extra meaning. And originally the word for a forcible sexual intercourse, was more connected to disgrace and to be stunned and stupefied. So it's stupore. So it's more connected to the root word of stupid than this sort of act of penetration per se. So that's, there's a lot in that, but there is something to be said about arguing with somebody, getting in their space. It's just a slippery slope of being annoying or being a little aggressive, and that just being part of life, to somebody really pushing boundaries that they really should not push. So, we've all seen these different situations brought to light, some of which are, Harvey Weinstein or Bill Cosby level criminal and horrible. And then on the other end, some are kind of complex, uncomfortable interplays with a sexual connotation. And it's not really clear where the boundary was really crossed irreparably, but this degree seems like it has that sort of tension there. Okay, and then the John Sandbach. So John Sandbach has this book with the Circular Temple, But I'm going to just go with his Chandra symbols because the circular temple seems like it just takes up too much real estate. So the Chandra symbols are his original symbols, I think from the around the early 80s. And in this symbol, it says, a woman burning a book on black magic. And that means a assertive denial of negativity, fear of experience, purging of understanding, and purified wisdom. Again, these themes of purity and transgressing this purity and this experience of, you know, maybe just this idea of that egg image and you've got to break a few eggs to make an omelet. Like, that's life. You don't just stay in your perfectly pure egg shell throughout life. Another cliche I can think of is when you're walking on eggshells around someone because any little thing will set them off. They're so tense. They're so ready to throw a tantrum or start an argument. So you're on the defense. And that sort of thing, you've got to be able to spar a little and to, with the sword sort of advocate for yourself and be okay with it and not have it go to the spiral of like, of misery and exploitation and, just sort of easily scratched honor, and this idea of a woman who can't handle black magic, she's burning it. I'm sure that anyone really into astrology has encountered someone at some point that is like, oh, astrology, no, that freaks me out. I can't hear anything. And it's just like, well, all I was going to say, it's Monday and that means moon day and the moon's in Cancer and that's a happy day. You know, it's like not all so dramatic. It's kind of just a hobby. I like it. I'm not trying to predict your death or anything too dramatic. Although, you know, you can get into stuff like that. So that's what those people are afraid of. Okay. And the Lonsdale. So the Elias Lonsdale has this book, Inside Degrees, and it interprets the Chandra symbols. And this is like, sometimes it's my favorite degree book, and at other times it's my least favorite because it's just such an art piece into itself. So sometimes it's not helpful, but sometimes it's just super beautiful. And I just thought I would read the paragraph for this episode. But Aquarius 7, A Woman Burning a Book of Black Magic, from Elias Lonsdale's Inside Degrees. Karma works by indirection. We draw to ourselves what we previously activated, and as it comes back, we curse the reflection. Such gestures multiply. They gather force and momentum. And soon we have fixed ideas about what is pulling us back and what is carrying us forward. Before you know it, you have become partisan, taking up this side against the other side, swept up in the drama. And you even become sure in your mind that whole segments of existence are bad and terrible and must be renounced completely. Yet, you are making a self-commentary in where your mind has led you. And there must come a point in the journey when the mind strips away its disguise and you know once again that all is of God, that all is toward the good, and nothing can ever harm you unless you insist upon it. So I really like that because I just feel like it kind of describes this moment in time perfectly. What is this? Today, Sunday, October 10th, 2021. I did the first half 2 days ago. But Saturn was like, oh, I'm going forward on this degree. I'm going to interrupt you and make you wait 2 days to continue this. And it's like, yes, Saturn, that's what Saturn gives you, some nice delays. But I think that paragraph just talks about these people. You know, there's certain people you can't talk about, whoever, without condemning them. I mean, I'm living in the Northeast, you know, I'm in Massachusetts or somewhere, I'm, you know, often in other New England states. This idea, there's a lot of people around here that it's almost like in talking about the weather is you have to say Trump is bad and Republicans are idiots. It's almost like they're not even thinking about diving into that topic. And it's like, who cares? Is he still in office? Oh, he's going to come back. Maybe he will. But it's just this thing where you just ingrained enemy and otherness. And I don't even think I experience it that dramatically. And I think there's other people who, you know, there's other places where the hatred can be more intense. I remember being in Amsterdam and then driving from Amsterdam to Rotterdam in, you know, the Netherlands. And the Amsterdam guy was just like, just lividly hating the Rotterdam people. And it's just like, I could completely not understand it because it's almost like two identical cities with me or to me or as a foreigner, you know, it's, or one has more like contemporary architecture and one, yeah, it was just like, I couldn't understand it, but this need for an enemy, it's there and it like, it needs to be checked. So this thing of like, of fighting a straw man, shadow boxing, and not to say it's all in your mind, all conflict in your mind. There's all these people out there you can find plenty of opportunity for conflict. But why engage with the conflict? When is it, there needs to be a strategic employment of conflict rather than you just splurting your id or your shadow self or your own issues, your own psychological hangups all over anyone who is disagreeable, because there's no end to disagreeable people. Okay, so moving to people who have this planet prominently in their natal chart that you may not heard of. The Aquarius 7, the sun, Ellen DeGeneres. So it's just, this is such a funny person for the most kind of famous Googleable person who has this, their son here, because they sort of had this, I felt like there's a lot of descriptions of these degrees that really applies to her well. Like she's, I forgot which one it said, which degree said this, but she's like sarcastic. She's like unpretentious. She can kind of take the tension out of the room. I remember she like hosted the Oscars and she's like, I'm going to order a pizza. And it's like, oh, what an unpretentious thing. She's just very like, I'm a normal person. And then coming out as the first person to come out as gay on like public, on national television. And that being like this really brave sort of move with like that, you could just picture that sword of her just saying this word, like I'm gay. And that being this like puncture into this taboo of heteronormativity was a huge thing. But then more recently, she's kind of been unveiled as this really mean person who's abusive or emotionally abusive and a bully to her staff on her talk show. And that she has this power in her to puncture the hot air. Her comedy's very sort of, I almost say like folksy or something, or just like simple and relatable, I suppose. And that's why she got her talk show. But then also, she's like bringing this fight to people who are actually trying to help her, are working for her, are trying to be on the same page as her. And she's, fighting and sort of wielding power against them in a way that finally caught up to her. And it became this big sort of scandal of like, Ellen's actually mean. She seems like she's nice, but she's mean. That being like it seems like a ridiculous scandal, but it's very interesting that Saturn's hitting her son right now. So I wonder, I don't know if she still has that talk show, but it seems like the Saturnian sort of repier or is going to like cut into her shining sun a little bit, into her ego. And it's really going to, you know, catch up to her now. I mean, even if it's just psychologically, she realizes like, what have I done? What have I become? Okay. Paul Newman. I mean, it's interesting. I would have never thought Ellen DeGeneres and Paul Newman, but Paul Newman also is sort of like, he's a likable guy, but he's not like hilarious. Like Ellen's, I wouldn't say she's like super hilarious. The way, you know, maybe like who's like a super hilarious stand-up. I'm not sure, but she's sort of like, oh, nice little friendly chuckle. And I feel like Paul Newman is the same way. It's like, he's like a boyish sort of handsome, fun time guy. Like in Cool Hand Luke, Butch Cassidy and Sundance Kid, they're just like charming movies. They're not really like, I'm not like on the ground, laughing, but it is funny. And I do love like Cool Hand Luke, and yeah, I do love his movies, and he's very lovable in a similar way that Ellen DeGeneres is seen as lovable. But I guess Paul Newman never really had that extra like kind of come around. This extra sort of mean shadow self. I think that one thing I remember reading a quote about, the sun in Aquarius is in its fall, right? So it's interesting that they're not these Leo performers, but I feel like a lot of Aquarian prominent people are more projected onto, and they're more these like glittering archetypes. And so I think I remember this quote Paul Newman said, like people would come up to him and he felt like they're treating him like an object, you know, a foot from his face, and saying, oh, look at his eyes really are blue. And he's like, hello, I'm right here. I'm not an object. I'm a person. And as much as like boo hoo, he's a famous movie star. It's interesting that he would experience that in a certain way as a sun in Aquarius, where that would be isolating. And dedicated a lot of his later in life, dedicated his wealth and his time to helping kids with disabilities is a real beautiful sun and a Saturn ruled sun thing. Saturn has afflicted these children with disabilities, and he is shining some light on them and bringing some light to them. And, you know, even if it's just, hey, you had a happy week, or I'm helping you with some medical stuff, he's doing what he can. So that's a beautiful, beautiful thing. Okay. Also, Rosamund Pike and Bridget Fonda have their son at Aquarius, the seventh degree of Aquarius. And Lewis Carroll, who wrote Alice in Wonderland. And this sort of, I love that. I mean, there's this like, I love this because there's this idea of a like a childlike enthusiasm in part of this, and a naivete, and the egg just like coming out of the egg. And Alice is like this kid whose like world is being cracked open, and she's in this wonderland, right? And she's in this, and she's seeing sort of the insanity and hell of the adult world, or this like psychedelic show of this of all this like I love the courtroom drama in Alice in Wonderland with the Queen of Hearts. It's like this kangaroo court, and it's probably just as ridiculous as some real life courtroom dramas, and just as just. But also there's a lot of strange like conflict, especially I think you have like the Queen of Hearts character in Alice in Wonderland. She's very hostile, and she's arguing, but she's like, what is she arguing with, a pack of cards? And And Alice kind of gets put into all these situations where she's like the puppet, and she doesn't understand why people are mad. She's just this innocent girl. There's I'm thinking of the Andre Gregory play in the 1970s of Alice in Wonderland, which was like an avant-garde hit that traveled the world. And I was reading about the actors. So there was the Dormouse and the Mad Hatter and Alice, and they practiced the tea scene every day. And they're trying to sort of figure out how to perform this in this, just by going and performing the scene and acting it out and improvising. And they arrived at this sort of conclusion where this, what the scene became, was that there was this sexual tension with the Dormouse and the Mad Hatter were in this like boys only club where there's all this debauchery and obscenities being discussed. And then an innocent young girl comes in and they're so nervous and they're trying to like shield her from their insanity and their disgustingness. And that's where the tension comes from the scene. And so there's these men that have just sort of hung out together all the time and are having, you know, this boys club sort of disgusting talk to the point where it's insanely violent and then cracked out of the egg, a young pure girl walks into it and she's like, what is going on here? Because they're not going to tell her. They don't want her to know the depth of their insanity and the depth of their sexual depraved perspectives. And I feel like being like having, you know, totally like been in the situations myself as like a woman where you're just like, this guy's acting so weird and I really don't want to know. I'm not going to ask because like probably will regret like hearing the backstory of whatever the social situation is. Okay, to move on. Two more people with the sun at seventh degree of Aquarius, Mikhail Nikolaevich Baryshnikov. Oh man, I just butchered that Russian pronunciation. A Russian dancer choreographer who was called the world's greatest living male ballet dancer and the most perfect dancer I have ever seen. So thinking of like sword fighting and this like masculine principle in dancing. I remember one of my favorite yoga teachers ever was a junior Olympic fencing champion. And she understood the micro movements of every piece of your anatomy, of every finger, every sort of muscle and bone and ligament. She could explain how moving slightly different changed the whole physical experience. So this dancing, fencing, and having it be the greatest male ballet dancer with the sun right here, that makes a lot of sense to me. And also Wayne Gretzky, who, if you think of his, instead of the world's greatest hockey player, right, of all time by any metric, and if you just think of this hockey stick instead of the sword, that just makes perfect sense, right? I mean, and even the ice skates are these blades, and the Saturn ruled sun of this cold, this light in the ice rink, right? In the cold, the cold arena. Also, Douglas MacArthur, who is the general in World War II, who was in charge of the American strategy and troops in the Pacific and the Philippines. And he is just like such an insane character. And you're thinking of that sort of, thinking about Ellen and how she's affable and funny and make you chuckle or something, but then also has this weird reputation for being mean and cruel to subordinates. I think that there's like a connection with Douglas MacArthur, who was very performative, very sort of entertaining in his way of presenting himself, but also maybe wasn't always doing what was like best for the war, more doing what was best for him, and was sort of difficult with people. But that's a whole like military history thing. The most recent hardcore history with Dan Carlin has this whole like multi-hour discussion of the Pacific Theater in World War II, and the description of Douglas MacArthur in that is incredible. So that's worth listening to if you like history. Okay, the moon at the seventh degree of Aquarius. We have Liam Payne from One Direction, Jeff Buckley. I do think it's pretty odd with the Hyperion symbol with the rivers, and Jeff Buckley famously died in the Mississippi River. That also Henry Ford, who was you know, obviously the founder of Ford Motor Company and a really famously anti-Semitic, like just like an insane level of anti-Semitism, not like casual. So I always think of like that fencing with a puppet, the shadow boxing, the mystical enemy, the shadowy other, you know, blaming all of the world's problems on a group of people that you have no actual knowledge about. They're just a specter for you to fight with. I think that's a, and the moon being this like emotional, I mean, it's very connected to the body, but also this emotional state of, you know, of fighting with someone. Also Chevy Chase, who, you know, early star of SNL and National Lampoon movies. But I think there's articles about him in like throughout the 90s and the aughts and just like the last three decades that he's just a very petulant, thin-skinned person. He can't really get along with anybody, and it really has impacted his career. He is very funny, and it seems like he should be able to get along, but there's something about him that has this fight in it. I think again he was in the show Community and had to leave because he went on this racist rant, which is just like which they like were literally like, why is this happening? Like, who are you fighting against? Why are you angry? And we can't have like this just like unhinged, loose cannon, like racist guy around. It's just too emotionally damaging for everybody involved. Also William McKinley, who I know died very early in his presidency, but I don't know much else. Conway Twitty. Mary Ann Cotton, who is a 19th century serial killer, and Chuck Jones, the Looney Tunes, Warner Brothers cartoon animator. So I'm thinking of a lot of like Roadrunner and Coyote, this back and forth, ridiculous, exaggerated conflict that's in a lot of those cartoons, and the sort of caricature of him drawing, like, you know, I'm throwing an anvil on you, I'm jumping off a cliff, and the exaggerated conflict. So I really like that one. Mercury at the seventh degree of Aquarius. We have Cristiano Ronaldo. We have Catherine, Duchess of Cambridge. The Weeknd, George Washington, who, it's interesting that like George, just thinking of like George Washington and the Catherine, whatever, who Duchess of Cambridge, the mother of like the heir to the throne and wife to the heir to the throne, very quiet political people, this Mercury in like very intelligent, but also very hesitant to talk a lot, and that sort of that Mercury mixed with that Saturn rulership of a very like measured, strategic, and tailored way of speaking. Also, Mercury in seventh degree of Aquarius, Anais Nin, I don't know if I'm saying her, I feel like a reader's vocabulary here, but she's a famous intellectual and writer, and she published a lot of diaries. So thinking about that imperative here to really reflect inward rather than project and go outward. So she has a very beautiful published record of introspection and psychological inquiry into herself. So that's a very positive person. And I would say guessing. I know The Weeknd's music just very casually from just having it played around me, but I would imagine that there's something about the lyricism there that has that quality. Mia Farrow, Mia Farrow has Mercury in at this degree, and Mercury can mean like siblings and children a lot of times, and she has all those. She's just like so many adopted children, and that's caused conflict. This idea of this conflict here. There's obviously pairing up with Woody Allen, who is to what degree he's a child molester. I'm not, it seems like a very messed up marriage. Just reading, there's that HBO documentary, but then other adopted children have come out and talked about their perspectives. Nothing really lines up. And so there's a lot around conflict and children in Mia Farrow's life. Not to say that she caused all of it, but she definitely exacerbated at the very least. I mean, it's stuff that is just really like not very enjoyable to consume this information. But I know one of her children is now a therapist for children who are adopted, especially children who are people of color who are adopted by white parents, and the conflict and difficulties that arise from that. And just thinking of Aquarius as in this section of the first decan in Austin Coppock's book, he outlines this decan as this area of a refugee, of someone who doesn't belong, and this idea of these children from, Korea or Africa brought to the United States or brought to the West, and the idea that that can be a seamless transition. It's like, no, there needs to be lots of psychological support for that. That's difficult, even if you're brought over as an infant. So that being this example of kind of how messed up that could be, it's pretty rough. Okay. Also, Chris Rock has his Mercury here. I would say like an intelligent speaker who can appeal, who has a bit of conflict in his stand up. But I would say in a way that is, reflective and isn't out of hand. I don't think he's full on shadow boxing, but he kind of is he isn't like a happy chuckler like Ellen DeGeneres. He sort of acknowledges the conflict a little more, and it probably doesn't take over other parts of his life because he can acknowledge it. Also, Charles Barkley has Mercury in at the seventh degree of Aquarius, and I would say he does qualify as like a affable guy, that the sort of like Paul Newman or Ellen before the downfall or whatever, but as somebody who's like, oh, I know that guy, I like that guy. He makes me feel comfortable, makes me feel, he puts down the sword. He doesn't bring up the conflict. So that's like the positive end of the spectrum. Also, Mercury in this degree, Linda Lovelace, who was like, I know that name. Look it up. She was a renowned pornographic actress, known for her performance in the 1972 hardcore film Deep Throat. So if you think about this sword and sword swallowing and Mercury, Mercury often signifying skills. So she was a skilled sword swallower, and it was documented. Later, she actually became born-again Christian and spoke out against pornography later in her life. So a bit of a conflict there, and a, you know, definitely themes of, transgression of innocence, a puncturing of that innocent young women, that sort of theme. But that's a very interesting one. Moving on to Venus at the seventh degree of Aquarius. So we have Tom Hiddleston from the Loki series, the X-Men, or what do you call it, Marvel Universe. So he does. So Venus has this beautiful, or this idea of like beauty, and he looks sort of intellectual in that role. He has a very stark appearance. So I think that might be a signification there. Also, FDR has his Venus here, and Venus is being this like equality to the people. And especially hearkening back to Austin Coppock's refugee symbolism, the idea of all those climate refugees from the Dust Bowl and the Okies, and these very these people who are afflicted by Saturn, afflicted by the economy and by forces beyond their control. And FDR was trying to bring some justice to that and really took up a fight. I think that there's also the Rider-Waite card. Now that I'm thinking of the Austin Coppock Deccan imagery, the Rider-Waite card that corresponds with this imagery are people sword fighting. And one person is losing and one person's winning. And FDR really put up a fight for his policy. Also, Venus here is Brian Jones, who is the original frontman to the Rolling Stones, who there was a bunch of conflict there. I'm not sure the full history of that conflict, but he ended up getting ousted from the band, and then he drowned in a swimming pool. So there's some sort of that, this sort of conflict where there shouldn't be conflict, this conflict around his art and his, and where he should be cooperating with his band members. He sort of was unhinged, had his demons, instead of going within, he was fighting with, you know, Mick Jagger and the rest, and did not end well for him, unfortunately. Also, another rock and roll dude, Lou Reed, has his Venus right at the same place as Brian Jones, kind of the same era, the same sort of darker edge of pop rock. Like, it's still, you know, radio friendly, but definitely this whole Lou Reed, like, take a walk on the wild side and sort of like go to like this whole like penetrate like parts of society and parts of your psyche that you may be afraid to, but it's, if you're doing it through art, that's probably one of the best places to do it. Also a Venus here, Rupert Murdoch, who, like he's like a media mogul that, has a lot, publishes a lot of content with like conflict, through like Fox News and his newspapers, and, a real sort of villain. But universally popular newspaper and sort of, before even there was the whole clickbait phenomenon, that sort of tabloid, that line that could really grab you and really like stab your attention, that sword here, makes sense. Also Michael Bloomberg, who was had the hilarious failure of a run for president. And it's interesting that FDR has his Venus here, and also Michael Bloomberg, both very rich men. And what FDR was willing to sort of take up arms for the people, this Aquarius group of, you know, the collective, and Michael Bloomberg taking up arms against the people, not for them. Definitely an eat the rich type person. I hope that when they line people up the wall, that he's one of the people that gets put in chains. Definitely a villain in my book. Also Gustave Flaubert, the French novelist, who talked a lot about class, and a lot of, just when I'm looking at more and more of these people, a lot of stuff about like class conflict, this whole idea of winners and losers, and in society, the haves and have-nots, the people in the center, the people on the outside, these huge Aquarian themes. His most famous book, Madame Bovary, had a lot of these themes of this woman feeling on the outside, feeling adrift, and the divisions within society about her, you know, feeling fulfilled, I would suppose. I mean, we could talk a lot more about that. Ted Danson has his Venus here, and thinking of him on Cheers as a sort of scoundrel, a sort of womanizer, who that sword, he has his Venus in this imagery where there's a sword, where he's just sort of like going through women, and there's a sort of aggressive push and pull when it comes to this Venusian activity of love. He's more of this aggressor, and more in this like Aquarian way, a little bit like less sentimental and less emotional, and more distanced. And it's all about the, you know, the chase and that sort of dance. Although, you know, not to say he's a heart of a stone, but you think of like Brian Jones and like the whole Rolling Stones ethos of they're like the bad boys, right? They're not the sentimental Beatles. They're not lovey-dovey. They have a little bit more of an edge. So Ted Danson having that a little bit. Also Thora Birch, who sort of had that little bit of that edge and hardness to the romantic arc in American Beauty. And returning to the theme of fighting for the collective, Huey Newton has his Venus at the seventh degree of Aquarius. Huey Newton being one of the founders of the Black Panther Party, and he fought for equality for people who were outsiders in their own land, for the Black community. So that being there's a lot of conflict in his life and a lot of struggle. And it is a situation where it this, I feel like, is a situation where there is a lot of conflict, but is actually well-placed. I would argue for FDR as well, that they were really doing it for a purpose, and that that purpose was, it probably included a lot of introspection and a lot of sort of purification of their own motives. And the fact that they weren't engaging in conflict for a selfish motive, but it was for a group, a betterment for a group of people that they cared about. And I think that's like a big lesson of this degree. Okay, moving on to Mars. In Mars in Aquarius, the seventh degree of Aquarius. So here we have Farrah Fawcett and Pharrell Williams. Also, Jack Brabham. He's a Formula One champion, so I had never heard of him, but a race car driver. So that sort of that aggression and that contest. But the two people that I thought were the most interesting is David Blaine has his Mars here, and another magician named Dynamo. And I was just thinking of David Blaine and the sort of Saturnian things he does, like he got suspended like in a cube, or and all these sort of these magic tricks that aren't even, they don't even turn to magic tricks. They're just like spectacles of endurance. And that being so Mars and Saturn of sort of like pushing, he's like pushing reality, pushing your perception, but also pushing his own body and sort of his own, torturing himself for, I don't know why, but I think also his original like special where he was just out on the street as a street magician doing his card tricks and whatnot has this very like Aquarian of the people, like getting out into the people, very casual. I'm one of you just walking the streets. So that has that very, and he does have a certain sort of dark macho-ness that I wouldn't say is at all like toxic. I just think that his Mars, is expressed in this area of Saturn that has this an extra sort of like testing himself and pushing himself to endure. Okay, Jupiter here, we have the seventh degree of Aquarius, George Clooney, Charles de Gaulle, Michael J. Fox. So I'm thinking of that sort of Michael J. Fox being that egg imagery, and he's sort of this, Alice in Wonderland imagery where he's sort of cracked out of this egg. He's just a suburban kid. He's an innocent. He's naive. And he gets cracked out of his egg into this insane adventure through, you know, the time travel. But he's also visiting his own family and his own mother. So it is this sort of inward introspection of all this conflict has to do with his family. So that's interesting. Also, Dennis Rodman, who also has a sort of like, rebellious childlike, energy, right? He is just like in the 90s, the basketball player with like crazy dyed hair before people were doing that and piercings. And it really had this teenage rebellion attitude towards it. And that Jupiter and just this larger than life show of that, of I'm an outsider. I'm different and I'm going to be aggressively different with the Jupiter in this degree. Also, Boy George has his Jupiter here. Another, in his name, Boy George, he's boyish, but also aggressively almost a different era, but wearing the makeup and the clothes and sort of just advocating for himself or pushing himself out there and like, this is who I am, in a way that's larger than life and has a little bit of an edge to it, and the way that you can't tell him what to do. You can't tell him how to look, and he has his own look. Also, Larry Page has his Jupiter here, and he is a computer scientist and one of the co-founders of Google. So one of the tech titans today that doesn't really make the magazine covers, probably because he's like just living his nice billionaire life. Why would you want to be in the public eye if you have that much money? Just like go, you know, sit on a beach somewhere. Or he's probably in a basement working on a computer if he's a true computer nerd scientist, and that's where he wants to be. So that's an interesting, so Jupiter, he created, you know, this Saturnian, this structure that is more based on ideas. You know, the Saturn ruled by air, ruled by information, and the Jupiter, he just helped expand that across the globe. Now Google's this like strange web of power that kind of gets anywhere there's computers, there's a Google. Okay, Saturn at the seventh degree of Aquarius. Saturn rules Aquarius. And I've been like steering away from bringing up events so much, but this one was too good to ignore. And that's the first flight in Kitty Hawk, where the Wright brothers flew for the first time, which I think is just such a huge moment, and especially this very powerful Saturn actually finally cracking the code of letting people be lifted up into the air, but not just like an air balloon. They could actually control where they're going, and that Saturnian control and methodical plans and the whole structure of the airplane. I mean, they worked for years together, studying birds, studying aerodynamics, studying engineering, and the accomplishment of, there's so many people around the world trying to do that at the time, and they did it. And Saturn definitely helped. So that was December 17th, 1903. And so now Saturn is in that degree again, having its fourth Saturn return, which really is, you know, longer than a human life, but it's really not that old. It's sort of like one and a half, one and a quarter human life. It's like, it's just insane how the world has gone from no flight to flights are boring and people complain about them. Okay. Also, Jodie Foster has her Saturn right here. And I think Jodie Foster is I love her chart. It has like a lot of Saturn, has a lot of Scorpio, and her power is like, she's unique. She's different. She's different from any other giant Hollywood actress. She's definitely, but she's relatable. And also thinking of Silence of the Lambs, where she was contending with this serial killer who is a psychologist, and this idea of conflict in real life, almost conflict to the death, versus being outsmarted or outmaneuvered in this like interior conflict. That has a huge theme there. Okay. Also, it's interesting that Ellen and Jodie Foster share a degree, a prominent degree, and they're both sort of prominent lesbians who for years were not out of the closet, but were famous. And then eventually now it's okay. But it's interesting that there's a shared degree there. Also, let's see, John Bon Jovi, Azalea Banks, Steve Carell, who I would say his what do I think of Steve Carell? It's like he's the boss in The Office, right? Like the boss, Saturn and Aquarius, that people don't like because Saturn's often a kind of more negative connotation. Or he's the 40-year-old virgin, that sort of late bloomer, that that really strong Saturn that, you know, people with a lot of Saturn signatures. I mean, if you even think of Jodie Foster, she, you know, was famous young. She was a taxi driver. She was in all these movies as a teenager, but really didn't come out of the closet and wasn't really like fully herself until much later. Then we have Gertrude Stein, another like lesbian icon here, who hung out with the men, hung out with Hemingway, had her sort of court in Paris, and she had a gender segregated sort of household in a sense, where she had her girlfriend and she would hang out with the men and be one of the men, and had this sort of structure of like, who are the people around, like Picasso, Hemingway, F. Scott Fitzgerald, Matisse, just these titans of like art and literature. And she was one of them. And she did that also by sort of denouncing her other people of her gender. I mean, and who knows, had she lived today, would she be transgender and identify as a man? Who even knows? It's hard to apply like the concepts that we've developed today into the past. Also, David Fincher, who, what did he directed Seven, he directed the Zodiac Killer movie. I mean, just a lot of very heavy Saturnian movies that are dark and deal with death. Also, Jon Stewart, the comedian, another comedian here, but the Saturn comedian. So instead of, we had Chris Rock and Ellen, I think that they talk about lighter topics. Even Chris Rock, who's a little more aggressive, Jon Stewart would, you know, talk about politics, talk about war, and his topics that he would, you know, address in his comedy had more to do with like structures and power and these heavier things. He would make jokes about that. So that's interesting. Also, yeah, Henry VIII, Henry VIII like famously had all the divorces, and that sort of sword egg sort of sexual aggression and, you know, lopping off the head of the wives that weren't producing him a son. That's an angle there. Let's see, Uranus at the seventh degree of Aquarius. We have Kylie Jenner, Camila Cabello, I don't know much about them. This is like a younger generation thing. But then we have Gerald Ford, who he was the vice president under Nixon, right? And then this Uranian moment, I wonder what the transits were at that moment, became president and was sort of a sort of like, a lot of the Ford people were like not really in the fold. Like it was like this Uranian moment of Watergate, of where all of a sudden Nixon and anyone too close to Nixon were toxic. And there was just this changing of the guard to Ford and all these sort of more fringe Republicans that all of a sudden got more power. Then there's Muddy Waters, Geronimo. So a Yeah, so a Native American 19th century war leader, and to think of that sort of experience of being a Native American, being born in the 19th century, and how much your world was completely just shattered with westward expansion. So he was someone who fought valiantly against this sort of world changing. Also, Nicholas de Staël, I've always liked his paintings. He's a great painter. He has a very, very thick painter. He's very impasto. And so interestingly, you achieve that quality of painting with a palette knife. So again, this image of the sword, and here's a painter who doesn't really paint with brushes, he paints with a knife. Lots of painters use palette knives, but not as much as he did. So he's definitely a painter worth looking at. And also William Booth, who founded the Salvation Army. So the Salvation Army was, founded in the 19th century, and instead it had an army structure, a military structure, but was trying to do charitable things and giving food and support and supplies, but using that that fighting structure to its advantage to do good and to not, kill people. Okay, Neptune and the seventh degree of Aquarius. Again, was trying to avoid some, I don't know why I made this rule in my head, but was trying to avoid events and was just more going to look at people, but had to include this one. The 9/11 attacks, in 2001 happened with Neptune at this degree. This conflict that was also this had the psychological element of people who felt left out of kind of global progress. People within the government trying to antagonize the group against outsiders and using that as their sort of leverage to launch decades of war. So this a lot of really psychologically fraught conflict connected with 9/11. And also the whole Neptune is like the fogginess around this conflict. Errol Morris documentary released around this time called The Fog of War. And I think even though they're talking about Vietnam, that was just this idea of people are like, I don't know. First of all, they're saying this: we're America's attacked, but it's not by a government; it's by this Neptunian organization. And so the American government's going to go fight in several different places because the enemy is everywhere, and that sort of fog machine. Nebulous conflict. But then, of course, also the first flight from Kitty Hawk happened when Saturn hit this degree, and then Neptune hits this degree, and planes are used as a weapon, even though they're clearly controlled demolition, but in this performative way, used as a weapon against buildings, against these Saturnian structures, right? This architecture ruled by Saturn, and then this Neptune comes here. They destroy these symbols, they destroy the structures, and then just think of all the refugees that have been created by these decades of imperial wars in Afghanistan, Iraq, the way that the dominoes have sort of all been knocked over, and there's just, conflict begins conflict. So that's a really negative Neptunian area. Okay, also Wilhelm Steinitz was a 19th century chess champion. So that's interesting of this, again, this like a chess champion can see all the moves in his, you know, see all the moves in his mind. And just like fencing, it's just like outmaneuvering the other person. So that Neptune of, he can see through the fog of logic and his opponent can't. So he can kind of see one move ahead of the other person. So that's interesting. And also some two very young people. So born in, you know, about 2001, Halle Bailey, not the actress, Halle Bailey and Danny Cimarelli. They're two singers that have some degree of prominence. They're very young women. William Quantrill, who is a Confederate Army, an American Confederate, or I guess not American, I don't know, in the American Civil War. The Confederate side. He is a guerrilla leader, and he has a really interesting chart. He has this Leo stellium, and then Neptune opposing his whole Leo stellium. So a valiant fighter, but then Neptune, that sort of guerrilla, sneaking up on the enemy, taking any advantage in the terrain. So that sort of mystery and shielded aggression. And Pluto. So here we have Pluto, where it hit earlier, you know, it hit years, I feel like, Pluto's at like 25, 26 now. So Pluto, Niccolo Paganini had Pluto here, born in 1840, and he was an Italian violinist and was a famous virtuoso and was considered one of the greatest violinists who ever lived. And he was rumored to be so good that he had sold his soul to the devil for his unbelievable ability. But that sort of Pluto, that really profound talent here and skill. So that's an interesting person. Daniel Webster, the guy that started Webster's Dictionary, and thinking of Saturn ruled ideas and information and that Plutonian weight of documenting every idea, every word. Also, Martin Van Buren, the president, and Charles Nodier. The North Node here, Amelia Earhart, another plane signification. I think this is why the Goldsmith image brought in the plane. But the Saturn, air ruled Saturn, it makes sense. So Amelia Earhart, it's her almost her destiny to be lost in the air. Also, Tony Blair had his North Node here, someone who was very involved in the UK prime minister, very involved in a lot of the post 9/11 wars. So his North Node so Neptune was transiting his natal North Node during 9/11. He really got his whole country wrapped up in all that conflict. Also, Emily Mortimer, the actress, and Kamel Owali. I don't know if I'm saying that right, but he's a French choreographer of Algerian descent. So another dance person. There was a ballet person, a male dancer, someone who had that masculine athleticism and skill, but also interestingly, a French citizen, but from a heritage that is in a sense a far away and sort of being out of place in French society, as there's a lot of prejudice against the people from Algerian colony. So that's Aquarius 7, the seventh degree of Aquarius, and, you know, got in a lot of people. But that's it for today, and see you next time around.